Announce it, so, Oh
boy.
Adler announced it.
Got my Weinberger.
The usual. All right. Just a note about the checkers board that's on the table. So in various Jewish circles, they have the minhag of not learning on the night of on the eve of Xmas. It's known as Nitel Nacht. Various reasons given: historical reasons, Hasidic reasons, all sorts of reasons as to how this custom came about. Even what the term Nitel means is a bit of a question amongst the authorities. But anyways, it was a minhag to not learn on this night. And many great rebbes would spend the night playing various games and doing different things. Someone once told me that by certain chassidim, I don't know if this is true, but a certain great rebbe would prepare his Shabbos toilet paper for the entire year on Nitel Nacht. He would spend the night ripping toilet paper. I guess that was before he could go into a store and buy a box of tissues, the same way we have today. But anyways, that's the we're going to be makel tonight. We're going to learn, and some say you dafka should learn. Right, there are those who say you dafka should learn on this night to counter any kochos of tumah that might be in the air, which we may believe or may not believe. Well, on the one hand, we might want to say that tonight has no significance whatsoever; it's a ridiculous, made-up thing. On the other hand, you might want to say that there is a sort of negative koach in the air that we're trying to counter. So Mirtz Hashem, our Torah should do that. Do just that. Okay. Also, this year is, as always, for Refuah Shleima, for Rafael Eliezer ben Rina Reisel and Yitzchak Moshe ben Shoshana. So I think one of the biggest challenges that people have in their lives is confronting oneself, right? The challenge of a person really doing a serious cheshbon nefesh, looking at the way that we act, and just really being able to confront ourselves in a meaningful way, in a sincere way, and in a very honest way. And certainly in the world we live in today, with cell phones and Blackberries constantly distracting us, right? There's studies that have been done on this, how people can't even bear to be alone with themselves. The second you get in your car, you turn on the radio, right? The second you step out of your front door, you're walking somewhere, down the block, you pop your iPod in, you're playing with your texting, right? And hoping you're, get hit by a car coming down the street as you're walking down, busy texting away. Right? People are very, very, and I think a lot of it is reflective of the fact that people are they're scared to face themselves. We don't like to reflect deeply on who we are and what we are, and it's easier sometimes to just run in circles around ourselves than to make a meaningful cheshbon nefesh. I'm telling you, there's amazing studies on this, about what's the proper noise level for a person to have to feel calm or comfortable. But they have studies that people only feel comfortable and calm if it's X number of decibels in the room. If it's too quiet, people get to just it's just too difficult to be by yourself. And at TABC this week, we had a very special experience. The guys in the Chassidus class, we tried to work on this avodah, of trying to become more comfortable with just being alone with ourselves and the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and being alone with our neshama, which in a sense is being alone with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And we spent the week in Chassidus class learning about Hisbodidus, Rabbi Nachman in particular, his concept of spending time alone and reflecting on life and talking to Hashem in your own words, dafka, in whatever language you're most comfortable in. And we took a trip yesterday out into the woods for a little adventure. There's some pictures online for those who want to see. It's very exciting. Charlie made one of the pictures. It's very hard. It is difficult to just talk to Hashem as if... And the goal is that it should be a regular conversation. If you look on page 1, Rabbi Nachman writes in Likutei Moran, in the second half of Likutei Moran, O Sadi Tet, he says on the right hand side, Amar she'ikar ha'izbodidus ha'asicha beino levein kono b'shlemus, huki shafaresh sichaso kol kach lefnei Hashem Yisbarach. The goal of his bodhis is that a person should be able to talk to Hashem so openly and so completely and share whatever he really wants to share. And he has many pieces on this throughout the Sefer. And he felt very, very strongly about this, as you'll see from the next paragraph. He says, the point is you should go so far to the point that a person is on the verge of his neshama flying out of his body, chas v'shalom. He's just so connected to God. Till he's on the verge of passing away, God forbid. That your neshama is still hanging onto your body barely by a thread. It's barely connected to this world. And that's what tefillah is supposed to be. But all the more so, when a person takes time to do extra tefillah, personal tefillah, in his own words, in his own way, right? The goal is that you connect in this very deep way. And this is how a person, you know, develops this trait of becoming comfortable with oneself. And if you look in the next paragraph, in Os Kuf, he says, Sipuli, this is Rabbi Nassan, his prized disciple, writing, Sha'amar Shemi Kotan Vagodal Yefshar Lios Ish Kosher Ve'emes Kiyam Al Yidei His Vodilis. Amazing. And I think in our time, you know, there are more Svarim coming out. The author of Bilvavi Mishkan Evna and his types of Svarim, where people are working on this avoda, which is what he says, from the smallest to the greatest, it's not possible to be a kosher yid, a fine person, right, a complete Jew, if you don't practice his bodhis. That doesn't mean you have to spend hours and hours in the forest like great tzaddikim, but a few minutes at the very least to connect to Hashem in your own words, right? When something happens, to just turn to Hashem and say thank you in your own words, or to, so, you know, you heard some bad news, take 30 seconds and found out this week that a friend of mine's father was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Right? So immediately I turned to Hashem. I didn't know. I wasn't going to sit down for an hour and have a schmooze with Hashem about it, but for 30 seconds I stopped and I said to Hashem, my own words, you know, give this person a refuah shleima. And he says, "V'hayam azkir kamav kamat tzaddikim ufursavim." Rabbi Nachman of Breslov used to mention many great tzaddikim. He'd rattle off their names: Amitim, true, you know, true tzaddikim. V'amr shekulam lo bal madrigasam kima ideis bodhis. That every single one of them only attained the level they attained through seriousness bodhis. By you can only become so big if you're willing to engage yourself, if you're willing to, you know, to open up and to talk to yourself. And if you look on page 2, I found a crazy thing last night. Just last night, I found this. You know, people sometimes think this is like a newer invention. This is Hasidim made this up. It doesn't have, you know, the normal people daven 3 times a day, normal davening, and normal davening is also supposed to be a conversation with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So I don't need to go out of my way to have, you know, adventures in the forest with snow, like, you know, these crazy TABC guys, right? You could talk to Hashem with regular davening also. So, you know, I'll be honest, even though I know I'm on tape here, when I had to tell Rabbi Adler that we were doing this, I was very, very nervous. So I went into his office. My wife encouraged me to tell him, not to just, you know, sneak everyone out of the school building. So I went into his office. Luckily, he wasn't there. So I left a note on his desk explaining we've been learning the writings of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, and we're going to spend some time on personal reflection in the forest. But today, I really wanted to show him this, because the Rambam's son, right? We all know Rabbi Adler is fond of the Rambam. The Rambam's son, Avraham ben Rambam, writes in his Hamasik L'Uvdei Hashem, which is really his work of ethics. He has an entire section devoted to his vodunus. Now, it may not be exactly the way that Rabbi Nachman of Breslov meant it, and the great, you know, Hasidic Rebbe's meant it, but he has it right here. I'll just read the first 3 lines with you, and you can look at it if you want. They have it in English now. Feldheim put out a beautiful English edition of Hamaspik Lo'odei Hashem. Look what he writes in Parak Yud Gimel. He says, "Ha'is vodunus hi achas ha'nichbados shemen hamidos ha'turomios." Right? His bodhis is one of the finest, it's one of the most important, most elevated midos that a person could have. The darkam shall gedole tzaddikim. This is the way of great tzaddikim, truly great tzaddikim. And Hashem just came to a Navi one day, and the Navi was just sitting in bed, and all of a sudden Hashem just decided to pick him as a Navi? No, a Navi was someone who developed himself and worked on that relationship till the point that Hashem actually, he could actually hear Hashem back. Right, he was able to hear the conversation both ways. V'hi nachlekas, he goes on to describe this bodhis chitzonius, this bodhis pnimius. There's an outward type of his bodhis, and there's an inner his bodhis, which brings a person to the levels of Ruach HaKodesh. Right, the son of the Rambam. So it's not a new invention. Okay, but it's going back to this key point of what? Of just willing to face oneself. And if you look at this week's parsha, the very first 3 words of this week's parsha, as we're going to see on page 3 in a second, is about facing oneself. It's about confronting oneself. And again, most of us like to work around the outside. And the pasuk says in Devarim, "Rav lechem sov ha'har hazeh." Enough going around the outside of the mountain. It's time to head tzafona. Tzafona implies to the tzafon, the hidden parts of a person. We like to work around ourselves. We like to go around the mountain, never to go through the mountain. Right, the fourth of Baal Trebi used to say, L'chachila, right? People always say, I try to sneak around this way, I try to go around this way. The fourth of Baal Trebi said, L'chachila, you know, you take it on, you take it head on. Right? Not to try to work around, not to always, you know, look to just stay on the peripheral. So if you go to page 3, a beautiful verse from the Kotzke Rebbe, in this week's parsha, he says, what's my Yigash Elav Yehuda? On a partial level, what does it mean? It means that Yehuda comes and he confronts Yosef, And he says, if you read the Midrashim, he says, I'm going to kill you, basically, if you don't, you know, I'm a big guy, I'm a very strong individual. He lets out this roar that's heard around the world, basically, according to the Midrash. And he says, Yosef, you know, he steps up to Yosef. But if you look, if you think about it, says the Kasker, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Tevas Elav L'chora Hu K'miusar. The word Elav, it could have just been Vayigash Yehuda, right? And Yehuda stepped up. What's Vayigash Elav? Yehuda stepped up to him. What do you need that word Elav? He points out in the parentheses, the Or Chaim HaKadosh already asked this question. So the Kasker Rebbe said, V'nira HaPerah Shenigash El Atzmo. Right? Vayigash Elav. He stepped up to who? Elav to himself. Right? That there comes a point in every Yehuda's life, and every Yehudi's life, where he has to step up to himself and figure out, what am I? Who am I? What am I supposed to do in this world? It's classic Kutzker style of art. The Kutzker is very big on confronting oneself, being emistic with oneself, being real with oneself. Go back to Parshas Vayeshev, when Yosef is looking for his brothers in the field, and he meets the Ish, which we know from the Midrashim, it's the Malach of Riel, and the Malach says to him, you know, what are you Mavakish? So the Kutzker says, again, that's not just a message what this one individual was asking Yosef, it's a question we have to ask ourselves every day of our lives. Right? Ma ata mevakesh? Ma ata mevakesh? What are you doing with your life? What do you want to do with your life? What are your goals with your life? That's what Yigash Elav Yehuda. You have to confront yourself in a very real way. And I think one of the greatest of arts I ever heard from my wife, she told me this idea that she had heard in college. For whatever reason, you know, she remembers other things that she's told me. But this one, she loves saying it over, and it's such a good art. She heard it from one of her teachers, who heard it from a guy who grew up in a very mixed type of home, where, you know, they were committed to Judaism and committed to other things as well. And he's, and the Vart is as follows. When Moshe goes out, right, Moshe finally goes out, he leaves Paro's palace, and he's looking at the Jewish people getting beat up in the fields, right, and being whipped by these terrible Mitzrim. And it says, Vayifen ko v'ko, he looked this way and that, right, he wants to kill this Mitzri. He looks both ways, and he sees Vayar ki ein ish. And he sees that there's no one around, and he kills the guy. So on a deeper level, this Baal Tshuva, this guy who was, you know, becoming more religious, said he saw that as his own personal message. That sometimes a Jew goes out and he looks this way and that, and he sees V'yarki ein ish. There's no ish. What am I? Who am I? Right? He looks ko v'ko. He sees it this way. Look at Moshe. On the one hand, he's growing up in the palace of Paro. He was like a grandson. The Medrash says, I think Kohelis, that he was like a grandson to Paro. And on the other hand, he goes out and he identifies so deeply with the Jewish people. And he said, he looks at himself, at Yarki Einish, there's no one here, there's no man here. What am I? How do I define myself? And that's this idea, right? Vayigash Elav Yehuda, confronting oneself in a real way. What are my goals in my life? How do I define myself? What's the true me? And obviously many Svarim deal with this concept of making serious Cheshbon HaNefesh, to take the time to try to figure this out. And obviously one of the early Svarim that works on this, if you go to page 4, is the Chovos HaLevavos. Right, the Chovos HaLevavos, one of the early great Jewish philosophical works. So he has an entire section devoted to Cheshbon HaNefesh. And he rattles off, in his Shar Cheshbon HaNefesh, which is the eighth Shar of the Sefer, he rattles off 30 examples of areas where a person can make Cheshbon HaNefesh. Now, I'm sure if we stop to think for a second, we could all think of areas that I could be making a Cheshbon HaNefesh, so to speak, in my life. But he's not happy to let us just figure it out. And obviously there's an element of personal Cheshbon HaNefesh, figuring out what I need to be thinking about. But he gives you 30 examples. Right? The first one he talks about is just your body. Look at your body. Make a Cheshbon HaNefesh. Think deeply for a substantial period of time how complex the human body is. And he says you'll be overwhelmed by it. You'll be so indebted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when you stop to do that. So let's just read a little bit about this concept, the need for Cheshbon HaNefesh. He says, and it makes it sound like it's a real mitzvah. He brings a pasuk in the Torah that makes it sound like there's almost a mitzvah d'oraisa for a Jew to make a Cheshbon HaNefesh, to take the time to sit down and Vayigash Elav Yehuda, to confront himself. He says on the right hand side, Perek Aleph. This is the beginning of Cheshbon HaNefesh. Aval Cheshbon HaNefesh Hu Shadlus HaAdam Binyanei Toraso VeOlamo. Right? So when a person makes the effort to analyze himself both from a Torah perspective and an Olam perspective, right? I mean, even things that are not directly related to his Avodah Hashem, he makes a Cheshbon HaNefesh. Obviously, a person thinks deeply enough to recognize that everything is in some way connected to Avodah Hashem. But to think about everything that I'm doing, am I doing the right Avodah in this world? To connect a discussion between, so to speak, himself, his body, and his seichel. To know what do I have, and what are my responsibilities, knowing what I have now, how do I respond to that? right? What's expected of me? Right, we already know this from the Torah itself. Take it to heart. Return, right? It's not just saying do tshuva. It's saying that a person has a mitzvah. Maybe you can call it a mitzvah d'oraisa. None of the monei mitzvahs counted as a real mitzvah d'oraisa. May chashvan nefesh every day. But the pasuk says v'yadata yom. Right? Know it deeply. Vashivos alavecha. Think about it. And he goes on to say, if you look on the left hand side now, in Parak Hey, he goes on to say that really chashvan nefesh is not, you know, it's not like Rabbi Nachman says where you just take an hour out. And again, the goal is, even Rabbi Nachman would agree, the goal is that it becomes part of every moment of my life, and I'm constantly analyzing how I'm doing and what I'm doing. But he says, he's at, you know, a lot of the Chovas Levavos is written in almost a question-answer format. So Parak Hey, he says on the left-hand side, Achim Achejbun Azeh Chov Al Adam Tamid Ob Ksat Hazman. Right? So how much time do I need to spend on Cheshbon and Nefesh? Is this a constant thing? Is this once in a while, every year, on Rosh Hashanah, I should sit down and think deeply about my goals and where I'm heading in life? So he says, Omer b'tshuva ha-sheila zos, ki ha-cheshbon chayev bo ha-adam kifi koach sichlo ma'alat ha-karaso tamid. Right? The goal is that what? That a person should get to the point where he's making this constant Cheshbon, in kol haref ayin, with every blink of an eye, he's constantly reevaluating himself. What's happening in the last second? And again, you know, the goal is not to go out of your mind, right? But the goal is to live with a real awareness that every moment I have responsibilities in this world. With every breath a person takes in this world, to live, right? To live with an awareness that Hashem is there at every moment. This is exactly this idea of his bodhidus. And if you jump down to line 12, look what he says. Right, every second to be evaluating and asking myself, again, maybe practically you're not spending every second thinking, what, did I do a good job the last second? Did I do a good job now? Did I do a good job now? Right, you'll go out of your mind. But to get to a point where at least I recognize that every second is a precious thing. And we've spoken about that in the past, you know, how a person uses their time well. There's a great mashkiach from Lithuania. When he was about 18 years old, he decided, you know, the pasuk says man lives, an average life of man is 70 years. So I have to assume, I have to hope, at least I have 52 years left. He sat down and he ripped up pieces of paper, about 20,000 pieces of paper, and he put them into a big empty basket, I don't know, it took like a laundry basket, and he took another big empty basket and put it right next to it. And every single day of his life, for the next 52 years, he would take one piece of paper and move it from one basket to the other. Just so that he would live with an awareness that, you know, time is passing. And he watched, as you know, as it, this was a famous mashgiach in one of the Lithuanian yeshivas. So he could see in a very real way that time is passing by, that I have to make a cheshbon nefesh. What am I doing with my life? And again, he gives 30 examples of different ways that a person can make a cheshbon nefesh. A person can make a cheshbon nefesh in his priorities. There were 600 lawyers, or people trying to become lawyers, were taking the bar exam in the, I read this story once, in the Pasadena Convention Center. 600 lawyers, you know, it's very focused, taking this very serious test, and there was a 50-year-old man there who had a heart attack. So two of the guys jumped up, right, it's the middle of a test, they jumped up, and they went over and they started taking care of this guy, and they administered CPR until, you know, they ended up spending about 40 minutes with this guy. And finally, after everything had calmed down, and the ambulances came, and they took care of everything, these guys went back to taking their tests, and needless to say, they felt that they were rightfully, they deserved that extra 40 minutes that they had lost to be able to complete the test. And they wouldn't give them the 40 minutes. And they said to them, they said, if you want to be lawyers, you have to know, you have to learn a thing or two about priorities. You know, if you want to be a serious lawyer, this is, can you imagine how sick that is? Right? So, you know, a cheshbon nefesh, a little cheshbon nefesh. For most of us, that's not a cheshbon we have to make. Right? But mitzad atov, there's the cheshbon us that we sometimes, we evaluate a situation wrong. Someone once came over to the Imre Emes, and he was noticeably disturbed that he didn't bring, it was a chassidish guy, he didn't have his gartel for davening. So the Imre Emes said, take my gartel. He says, Rebbe, why should I take your gartel? He says, why would I not want to give you my gartel? He says, wearing your gartel is a minhag, and doing a chesed for a fellow Jew is a mitzvah d'oraisa. So you take the gartel, I can see you're very noticeably disturbed, and I'll take the mitzvah d'oraisa. You take the minhag, I'll take the mitzvah d'oraisa. You know, so make a cheshbon nefesh. What are our priorities? What comes first? How do I evaluate? But again, those are our pratim in cheshbon nefesh, in trying to vayigash elav Yehuda. How do I spend my time? Right? What are my priorities? Those they're big things. But I want to try to go a little more to the core of what, you know, how you define the vayigash elav Yehuda. So if you go to page 5, there's a beautiful statement from the Baal HaTanya. And it's really this idea. It's another dimension of, I guess, this Vayigash Elav Yehuda, of really getting to know oneself. And the pasuk in Parshas Lech Lecha, the pasuk says, "El Aretz Asher Eka." Right, Avram is told, "I'm going to come to the land which I will show you." Again, the pasuk being, "I'll show you the land." But on a deeper level, the Baal HaTanya says, quoted in the Sefer Sichos Kodesh from the Rebbe of Spinka, from Eretz Yisrael. He says, "Amar Baal HaTanya, Amar Le Hashem Yisbarach Avram." Hashem says to Avram, "Shom Era Lecha Mi'ata." Right, come to the Aretz Asher Eka, I will show you who you are. Right, now you can think about why Dafka Eretz Yisrael is the place where all of a sudden things start to click, where a person is able to think with that clarity. I mean, I think I can tell for myself, there are times when I've been in Eretz Yisrael and all of a sudden I'm hit with this great clarity, as opposed to in America, I sometimes don't have that same clarity in my life and what I want to do with my life, what my goals are. But that's what Avram is being promised. Come to the land Asher Eka and I will show you to yourself. I'll introduce you to yourself. So how do you define a person? Right? If you're going to ask a person, what characteristics do you look at to define a person? So on page 6, you have the famous idea from Rav Hutner. It's really a Rabbeinu Yonah, but Rav Hutner, the great Rosh Yeshiva from L'Chaim Berlin, he made this idea famous. He really took this Rabbeinu Yonah to the next level. And the idea is as follows, and I'm sure some of you have heard it before. Right, Rav Hutner is talking about, how do you define a person? How do we decide, we want to make cheshbon nefesh. The first thing we probably need to make cheshbon nefesh are, what are our values? What do I value? What's important to me? Right, in a major global kind of way, what is something that I value? Who is someone that I look up to, that I see as a role model? So Rav Hutner writes, you can see where it's boxed off in line 3. He says, you want to understand how to evaluate a person, right? And again, we don't like to judge, but sometimes you have to judge. At least we can judge ourselves. How do you evaluate a person? How do you decide if this person is doing what, is living a real life, is really making the proper cheshbon nefesh? So Rabbeinu Yonah says on the pasuk in Mishlei, Right? How do you define a man? It's lefi mahalo, which means what? The simple shot is lefi mahalo. How is he praised? What do people say about him? If everyone says he's such a great guy, has such a great reputation, then chances are he's a great guy. But Rabbeinu Yonah totally flips it on its head. The lechora perish a kasev of who, right? So he says the pasuk shot is the ha'ish nikar mitoch ofen ahilol shebnei adam mahalim oso. What do people say about this guy? If he has a great reputation, everyone says, yeah, he's such a great guy, he's a good guy. So, okay, so the chances are he's a good guy. Chances are he's not faking everyone out. It happens sometimes, but chances are he's a good guy. Rabbeinu Yonah comes to take it out of this way of thinking, and he says, no. How do you define a person? You define him, says Rav Hutner, in his first piece on Purim. You define him by what? By what that guy looks up to. What does he praise? What are his values? What excites him? Right, what gets his heart racing when a celebrity walks into the room, or when a great tzaddik walks into the room? Right, what gets him excited when his sports team wins, or when he hears a great Torah? What really gets him pumped up? And if you jump down to line 14, he says you can have two types of people, which on the surface you would look at them and say, oh, this guy is the more serious Jew. And Rav Hutner says, based on this Rabbeinu Yonah, we have it all backwards. We're analyzing people completely backwards. The Ikar HaSheila, you can see in the middle of the line 14, the Ikar HaSheila b'mivchan ha'odemu, you want to analyze a person, you want to put a person to the test, kolach ha'karas ha'chashivas shalom. What's choshev to him? What does he value? Heichan u'poa, where does he put in that effort of what is he interested in? You're talking to the fun of Shnei Ben Adam. You can have two people in front of you, says Rav Hutner. Ha'echad osik b'torah b'shkeidu v'asmada. One guy, he learns all day. The second guy, he doesn't learn all day. He has a regular job. He's a good person. He's a fine Jew, and he makes time to learn. But one guy's sitting in kolo. So on the surface, we're all going to say, oh, the kolo guy, look at him. Wow, look what he's doing. He's finishing shas every couple of years. Amazing. But it says in front of him, if you look a little deeper, sometimes you see that motziim anu etzal rishon tenuos shal zbatlus b'shash nichtas lav asher gadol. Sometimes that guy who's been sitting and learning in yeshiva for so long, we think, oh, this guy is a true ben Torah, right? A person who really reflects Torah values. And all of a sudden, a very wealthy gentleman walks into the room, and all of a sudden you can see that this guy has, this yeshiva bachar has this sparkle in his eye, like, wow, there's this envy. I wish I could have been that. I wish I could have driven that guy's car, had that guy's, fancy cell phone. The ilu b'shash and nichlis love Tam Chacham. When the Tam Chacham walks into the room, okay, that's what he's used to seeing. Doesn't excite him as much, right? He says, he's not such a big Talmud Chacham. Other people know more Torah than him. He knows who doesn't become. He's not moved. And on the other hand, sometimes you have that second guy, that guy who's not spending as many hours in the Beis Medrash. When he meets that Talmud Chacham, all of a sudden, he's blown away by him. He acts to him like as if he's just met the greatest human being in the world. And this guy has a lot more money than this Talmud Chacham. He's a lot more worldly and a lot more famous in some ways. But when he sees the Talmud Chacham, he says, that's what's real. So it says Rabbeinu Yonah, and look where it's underlined. He says, who's the real Ben Torah? Right? Who has the real Torah values? Ki af al pi. There's no question with regard to the actual learning. The first guy's situation is harbe yoser gavoa mishal hasheni. It's a much higher level. But the first guy is not the true embodiment of what Torah is, because he's revealed at his essence, right? In the Vayigash Yelav Yehuda perspective, he's revealed that what, that the Torah is not, it's secondary to him. That's his job. So he's good at it. He spends a lot of hours. This guy spends a lot of hours at his office. This guy spends a lot of hours in the Beis Medrash. But it's not his essence. It's not who he truly is. And I think that's one of the that's certainly one of the big pieces in fulfilling the words of the Kotzker, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, to see, to make a real cheshbon nefesh. What are our values? What gets us excited? And if we see that we're more excited about things that are that should be secondary, of secondary importance to us, so then okay, maybe we need to reevaluate. One of my friends recently, I don't know if people saw, Rav Schachter from YU was on the cover of Mishpacha magazine, right? Which is a big deal. Mishpacha magazine generally caters to a more yeshivish crowd. And Rav Schachter from YU was on the cover talking about the Rav, and I didn't get to read the article yet, but someone told me that speaks very positively of YU, and tries to show how the stronger religious part of YU is not that different in their values than the yeshiva world, so to speak. So one of my friends, I saw a picture. He sent me a picture of him getting his Mishpacha magazine signed by Rav Schachter. And I was thinking, we have people who chase after autographs of celebrities, and they have the baseball cards, and this is what he's excited about. He's going to track down Rav Schachter. I'm sure Rav Schachter thought he was out of his mind, but okay, he wanted an autographed Rav Schachter Mishpacha magazine. So how am I? That should be our values. Those are our celebrities. Those who we get excited about. Those are the people we want to look up to. I think another major component in the Vayigash Elav Yehuda, if we jump to page 7 now, is another medrash also in this week's parsha. A famous medrash and a very scary idea when it comes to cheshbon nefesh. Right, the medrash is well known. It's quoted here by the arrow. Abba Kohen Bardala Amar. Right, what happens? Yosef reveals himself to the brothers, and in that instant, the brothers, their whole world just falls apart. This was like. Some you almost think that deep down inside they kind of knew something crazy like this is going to happen. They knew that Hashem was pulling strings, and so they say it. It's open in the Pesukim. So Abba Kohen Bar Delamar, Oy Lanu Miyoma Din, Oy Lanu Miyoma Tochecha. Right? Woe to the day of judgment. Woe to the day of rebuke. Right? Whoa! It's terrifying. The day that we're going to have to stand before Kadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Yosef Katlan Shel Shvatim Haya. Yosef was the youngest of brothers. V'lo yachlu achiv la'amod b'fnei tochachaso. And Yosef, when he gives tocha to them, and it's not such a harsh tocha, he says, I am Yosef. As long as I am Yosef, my father's still alive. You'll see, we'll read into it a little more to show that it was a pretty strong statement. But, okay. It wasn't ripping on them, at least not openly. So imagine, the brothers they couldn't speak. The neshamas flew out of them, according to some judges. They died on the spot. They didn't know what to do. Certainly the busha was compared to death. Because Yehovah Kadosh Baruch Hu v'yochiach l'chol echad v'echad l'fi ma'ashehu. So in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, when you have to stand before God, and God plays back the tape of your entire life. Right, Allah is Kama Vakama. You can imagine how terrifying that's going to be. So Shalom Shodron, the great Maggid of Yerushalayim, writes in the Sefer Lev Shalom, he says, what does that mean, Lefi Mashahu? Right? When a Kadosh Baruch Hu sits down and sees, looks at you, Lefi Mashahu, for what you are. What do you mean, for what you are? What does that mean? Right? He says, Tzarech Lahavin, Ma'u Kavanas HaDvarim, Lefi Mashahu. Obviously, God judges you for what you are as opposed to what someone else is. God doesn't compare you, right? That's basic. God's not going to expect me to be someone else. He expects me to be me. So, what does it mean that God looks at you, Lafim Ashu? So, Rav Shalom goes on to explain, he says that, and what does it mean, Lafim Ashu? It means who you really are. God knows who you really are. Everyone knows the famous story of the Nitziv. Right? The Nitziv was was nearly, you know, nearly left yeshiva, and when he finally made a siyum on one of his farim, when he published one of his farim, he says, you know, imagine I would have got the Shemayim, and it would have been an average Jew, and he would have said, no, where's this sefer, where's this sefer? Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what we are, the Fima Shehu. And Rav Shalom explains, Ela bira dvarmu shiyesh bachrim shemistovim biyeshivas shanim al gabi shanim. He said, there are bachrim who go to yeshiva year after year, uve'etzam enam ela mistovim savivatzam. Exactly like he said. And what are they really doing? Right? They're walking around the yeshivas, but what they're really doing is they're walking around themselves. They're not willing to sit down and make a cheshbon nefesh. What am I capable of accomplishing in this world? And they'll make all the excuses in the world. Right? I'm not smart enough, I'm not this enough, I'm not that enough. Right? We can all have that story. And it's terrifying to think you get to Shemayim and Hashem says, Rafi Mashahu. It's not an unrealistic standard. God's going to take out this picture of you and you're going to say, come on, who, that's not me. It's nothing to do with me. It is you. Hashem said, I'm going to show you, I'll show you who you really are. And you'll have nothing to say. Right? Like the brothers couldn't respond to Yosef. We'll have absolutely nothing to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's a very scary idea. But the goal is not that we should be scared. The goal is that we should wake ourselves up a little bit and want to make that cheshbon nefesh. And if you look on page 8, Rav Shalom goes on and he tells a little maisa. I could tell it outside, but I just want to show it to you inside a little bit. On the right hand side, he quotes a maisa that he heard from Rav Isaac Sher, who was one of the Talmidim of the Saba of Slobodka, the Alter of Slobodka. And he says on the right hand side, Shemati Rav Isaac Sher Zatzal, Mitalmidim Shal Saba Slobodka, Shepam Omaret Al Saba Bebesa. Right? It's worth it to read it inside. It's a good story, I could tell it outside, but it's worth it to just see it in the Lashon because it really makes it even a little more intense. And I think our idea is intense enough, but just look at this. V'amalor of Isaac. He says to him, Rav Isaac, Boi mi lechalon, come, right? The altar of Slobodka. Imagine talking about a person who really knew who he was, a new people. He says, come, let's look out the window a little bit together. V'rav is bonu b'es ha'kvaros echad gadol. Let's look at the big cemetery out there. So Rav Isaac Sher goes over to the window, and he looks outside, and he's thinking, you know, there's no, I never noticed a big cemetery right outside the window. Shemati Tam al Devarai, and so the altar says, I know you're going to ask on my words. Hari HaBeis HaKfaros Nimtza HaRchik Manir. You're going to say that the Beis HaKfaros is a mile and a half from here. Acha Emes Huk Devarai. He says, come, let me show you. Bavarecha. Come, let me show you. I'll show you a cemetery that you never noticed before. Look what he says. And again, it might sound a little extreme. We have to apply this in an appropriate way, but just, you know, let's hear it in a real serious way. You look out at the street and you see there's a lot of action, people coming and going. Everyone's running around doing their thing. Looks very lively. So he pointed to a certain individual, he picked a certain guy and said, let's take that guy for example. Right? That guy is a brilliant man. He has a magnificent mind. Hashem blessed him with a tremendous mind. He could change the Torah world. He could become a big Rosh Yeshiva. He could inspire hundreds, thousands of Talmidim. It's not that he doesn't recognize who he is. But this is the scary part. You can even know how smart you are and decide to use all that wisdom for something else. From a little age, his parents told him, yeah, you're a genius. He was in all the, you know, he took all the APs in high school and he got a 1600 on his SATs. Right? In the old system, when 1600 was the perfect score. But what happened? And again, Rav Shalom is obviously very harif. Shalom Shojoni is telling the story. But again, let's take it to heart a little bit. El Shahai Alehem Zuvuvim B'mocham. But his parents, right, pushed this kid down a certain path. They achlitu shutzarach leos professor. And they said, what good is it to become a Rosh Yeshiva? It's not so impressive. It's not so honorable. The world at large doesn't recognize that. Better you should become a professor, become a doctor, become a big hotshot lawyer, become a great scholar, an academic. And then look at this line. And this is what made it worth reading, just for this line. He says, Rav Isaac, look at this. He says, this guy looks like he's walking around, he's full of life, but he's... From a religious perspective, he's as good as dead. He's not accomplishing anything to better the world, right? At least, again, from a strictly Torah perspective. And he says, it's as if this person's walking around with a big gravestone that says what? Po nitman hagon Rosh Yeshiva gadol. With that decision to become that professor, and to not give Torah a shot, right? At that moment, he set up a gravestone right in front of himself and said, "Here lies," right? Here, right? He just killed Rosh Hashiva. Here lies the great Rosh Hashiva. And he goes on, he describes another guy with tremendous emotional capabilities, and he decides to channel towards music, and he becomes a professional musician. Again, a very talented individual. He plays harp for a living, he says. And he could have been this great mashkiach. He could have used that fiery personality and that warm personality. He could have used that to inspire people. And with his decision to not do that, so he also put up a tombstone that says, "Here lies the great mashkiach." Right? That could have been. And again, we're not convinced of this. You know, we think, well, our excuses are better. Right? We know we have the answers. But I'm saying, you know, big people have been lost. L'havdil, you know, in the secular world, there were people who were big people who were so close to being nobodies. And again, maybe what they became is not, from as Torah Jews, nothing that we're so blown away. But I'm saying these are people, great, great people who we recognize as great people in the world. Like, for example, who am I describing? This person didn't speak until he was 4. He didn't talk at all. He didn't know how to read until he was 7. His teachers thought he was very slow, like mentally very slow, and he was a space cadet. He didn't get into Zurich Polytechnic. You know, he wasn't. Albert Einstein, right? How about this guy? At 25 years old, his business was a complete failure. At 27, he had a nervous breakdown. At 34, he tried to run for some position and lost. At 46, he ran for another position and lost. At 47, he ran for vice president and lost. Right? One of the greatest presidents of all time, Abraham Lincoln. Right, Lahavdil, you know, in the realm of Torah, there are people who have Arya Kaplan when he was a little kid. Right? People, his teachers thought he was like, he's pretty smart, but he failed every test. He had terrible handwriting. It would have been someone that the teacher wouldn't even mark his test because his handwriting was so bad. I should do that. Right? The teachers, they were just, I can't read this. And this kid was a genius. Arya Kaplan knew Kol HaTorah Kula when he passed away at such a young age. So I'm saying, you know, Lefi Mashahu, what are we? How much do we know ourselves, and how much do we give ourselves a shot at letting that potential come out? Again, we think we have the excuses. We can say this, we can say that, but in the Avodas Hashem, excuses don't really cut it. And that's what we have on page 9. Rav Nassim Geshtender, the big rav in Eretz Yisrael. I went to his house once in Bnei Brak to buy a sfarim from him. So I found this sefer called Sichos Malav Malka, where he, on different yard sites, he says over different ideas from different people, whoever's yard site it is. So in the month of Shvat, he has a bar from the Kutzker. What time is it? Anyone have the time? I don't know what time it is. It's 10? Okay, so we'll wrap up soon. Thank you. He says the following idea from the Kutzker. I'll tell it to you outside. There's a medrash that says that Eliyahu HaNavi, it's a medrash time to be Eliyahu. Eliyahu HaNavi met this guy. And he asks the guy, he says, "Do you learn Torah?" "I don't learn Torah." He says, "What do you do for a living?" He says, "I'm a fisherman. I catch fish." "How do you catch fish?" "Well, I make these very complicated nets, right? These very, you know, clever contraptions. I catch birds." You know, he tells him all this. He says, "How'd you figure all that out?" "Oh, I sat down and worked at it." So he says, "So he says you yourself, you're admitting you're a brilliant man, right? You're very creative. You're very clever. When you use your mind in the right way, look how much you're able to accomplish." He says, "So what excuse do you have not to learn Torah, right? You know, look how smart your brain is." So the Kutzker Rebbe asks the following question. He says, "What's the proof? Just because you're good at that, it means you're good at Torah?" "What, so he's good at making, he came up with a clever invention, how to catch fish in a very clever way? So that means he's going to know how to learn Rashi Tosos?" Right? What's the automatic proof? Just because you're good at one thing, I mean, automatically, if I try hard enough, I'll be good at something else? So look what the Kutzker Rebbe says. He says, four lines from the bottom on the right-hand side. The Teretz Pek Kadosh, he says, this holy, the holy mouth of the Kutzker answered, "How did he come to the recognition? How did he figure out to catch these fish? Right? How did he become so brilliant at making these nets?" He says, "You know what? You know how he figured it out? He haven shezel parnasaso, because this guy understood that this is my parnasa. V'im lo yilamed ledog yishar ra'iv lepasachem. And if I don't figure it out, what's my other option? To starve? I'm as good as dead." So he didn't see it as a choice. He came to a recognition that I don't have a choice. I need this to survive. And if I don't do this, I'm gone. When we came in Shalom, no Shalom Breira, Acheres, he had no other option. So he sat down, Halach Lumra Samalach Hazos, he figured it out. If we would have the same appreciation for what Torah is, that Torah is life itself, then we wouldn't make excuses and say, "I'm not smart enough, I'm not this enough," right? We say there's no option, "I'm sorry, there's no choice, what am I going to do? How am I going to survive? Spiritually, how am I going to survive without Torah? I would force myself to learn how to do it." And that's the Fimashu, right? When we see that we're capable of doing one thing, that becomes the ultimate, you know, the Fimashu. And that's really the answer to what Yosef was, what was happening with Yosef and the brothers. When Yosef says, Ani Yosef Ha'od Avichai, again, it's late, I won't read it inside, but on page 10, the Beis Halev has a famous idea. Ani Yosef Ha'od Avichai, what's he really saying? He says, I am Yosef, my father's still alive. You're claiming, my brothers, you're claiming that if you don't give me back Binyamin, then what's going to happen? Then your elderly father's not going to make it. Then Yaakov's going to drop dead. Right? So Yosef says, well, why didn't you say the same thing when you sold me? Right? And they have nothing to say. Your own actions prove. And he gives some very strong examples of the Beis Halevi. He says, you know, a guy comes to your door collecting tzedakah. And all the first thing you do, right? First you do, you know, you, if you're really mean, you pretend no one's home. Okay, if you let the guy through the door, so you're very cold with him, you roll your eyes a few times, you say, no, you have any papers? You know, this is expired, and it was just yesterday, and never this guy's, you know, he sounds legit, but you don't want to hear it, right? And you give him $2. You say, you know, times are tough, it's a tough economy now, right? And then what happens? And then the next day you treat yourself to a nice fancy dinner. You go spend, you know, $100 with your family to go out to a restaurant. When you could have made dinner for the family for $10. Right? So you get to Shemayim and Hashem said, I don't understand. You told me Parnas is tight, everything's so tough, and then you go out and buy yourself a nice gift. Right? So the Fimashu, you bust yourself, you get yourself in trouble. So Yosef says that you guys are claiming. You're claiming that it's not possible, right? We have to come back with Binyamin, or our father's going to die. But what about when you sold me? And that's exactly what the Kotzer is saying. We say, I'm not capable in Torah. I'm capable in other things, right? If we believed as much that Torah was as important in our lives as all these other things, so we'd be able to do it. I heard a story once from Rafael Waxman. He said he met this Russian boy. And this kid was telling him, you know, this kid was known to be very diligent. As he was becoming more religious, he was just very quick and very zaris in his, you know, in everything. So he asked him, he says, how did you get like that? He says, when I was in the Russian army, he says, I had a lieutenant who used to come in the morning, and he'd say, you know, everybody up, right? That's it, everybody up. And he'd take a matchbook out of his pocket, and he would strike a match, and by the time that match, right, burned down to his fingers, 30 seconds maybe, 40 seconds, I don't know how, you know, how big the match was. By the time that match was burnt down to his fingers, you had to be out of your bed, right? You could have been in a nice deep sleep. You had to be out of your bed, you had to have your boots on, tied a certain way, standing there ready at attention with your gun, fully dressed, ready to go. Right? Okay, so for the Russian army, we're prepared to do that, but for Hashem, I'll hit my alarm clock. You know, hit my alarm clock 25 times. Right? Lefi Mashu. Hashem's going to show you, just show you yourself. I'll show you cases where you had all that effort. I'll show you where you spent all that money. And then the guy is asking for tzedakah, you can't give him a couple dollars. Right? So we do it to ourselves. I'll just end by connecting it to the fast day that's coming up on Sunday. We'll go to page 13. We'll conclude with this. My fast day is obviously our time. Now, one of the reasons I picked this topic, besides the connection to the parsha, is that a fast day is a time for real serious chesed and nefesh to really reflect on, you know, Vayigash Yoav Yehuda, what type of Jew am I? So what happened on Asar B'Tevis? What exactly was it all about? Right. So on a simple level, what happened? The Buchametzer came, and he surrounded the city of Yerushalayim. He laid siege on Yerushalayim for 3 years, and eventually it led to the, you know, the breaching of the walls 3 years later on the 9th of Tammuz, according to most opinions, and that was, it's really the beginning of the end. Asar B'Tevis is really the beginning of the end of the Beis Hamikdash, of Churban Bayis Rishon. But what's the whole idea of a siege? Right, what's the deeper message of a siege? When our enemies siege us from the outside, we're surrounded on the outside. I think it goes back to one of the first things we said. Right, the Pesach in Devarim says what? Rav lechem sovar zeh. Stop going around the outside. Like Rav Shalom said, the guys are walking around themselves in the Beis Medrash. Right? We like to work around the outside. But what happens when the enemy sets up a siege on the outside? Where do we go? We have no choice but to go inside. Right, we're forced to turn inward. We can't. You're not allowed to go outside anywhere. You can't go around the outside. The outside is taken over by the enemy. That's Hashem's message of saying to us, you know, you're forced to turn inward. There's an amazing Avudraham on page 13. The Beis Yosef quotes the Avudraham in Hilchos Tanios that if a Asar B'Tevis falls out on Shabbos, you fast. We don't pass this, it doesn't happen, Bisman Azeh. But you would fast even on Shabbos. Why would you fast even on Shabbos? We only fast on Shabbos for Yom Kippur. So the Avudraham says, just like it says, Yom Kippur, Be'etzem Ayom Azeh, so too by Asar B'Tevis, it says, Be'etzem Ayom Azeh. Right? So you have to fast. Be'etzem Ayom Azeh has to be on that day. You can't push it off. But you see the connection between Asar B'Teves and Yom Kippur. Well, what other day in the calendar year does a person make a bigger cheshbon and nefesh? Right? You're forced to turn inward. The siege on the outside forces you to turn inward. The etzem ayom hazeh, get in touch with the etzem of a person, the essence of a person. Asar B'Teves is the 10th month, the 10th day of the 10th month, counting from Nisan. Right? It's the Yud of the Yud. It's the Yud of the Yud. It's the 10th day of the 10th month. Right? It's the time where the Yud, the Yehudi, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, turns more inward than ever. It's the Yud Shebiyud. Right? It's the Jew of the Jews, the inner essence of the Jews, compared to Yom Kippur. It's like the fast on Shabbos. Right? It's a time for a Jew to look deeply in the inside himself. So Mir Tashem, we should be Zocha, to become the types of Jews, you know, who get a little bit above the iPod and the BlackBerry and the car radio. The type of Jews who could bear to be with ourselves, to make a serious cheshbon and nefesh about who we are. There's a story that Rav Kook, during the British Mandate, so Rav Kook was forced to come before a certain council. And they asked, they said, what's with you Jews? Good Torah for Asar B'Teves. What's with you Jews? You know, you're so... What's with the Wailing Wall, this Western Wall? It's a bunch of rocks, a pile of rocks. What do you care so much about it? Right, well, what's the big deal? You know, find somewhere else to pray if you really need to pray so badly. So Rav Kook said, just like there are people who have hearts that are made of stone, so too there are stones that are made out of heart. Right? So that's what this is. These aren't just stones to us. You know, these are stones that have been transformed into heart. You know, so let's make Yigash Elav Yehuda. As the Yerushalmi says, a person who doesn't build the base of Mikdash in his time, it's as if he destroyed it. So Sunday begins the beginning of the end. It's decided on Asar B'Teves, Chassam Sofer says, if there's going to be a Tisha B'Av this year. Right? That's the Chassam Sofer. Shemayim is being decided this Sunday, are we going to have Tisha B'Av or not? And the answer is, you know, the parsha is always connected. Yigash Elav Yehuda, make a cheshbon and nefesh, right? Recognize that a heart of stone can be turned into a heart of made of heart, a lev basar. And Mir Tashem will be zocha not to see Tisha B'Av this coming year. Sure.